This is Extraordinary Lives, a podcast from the team at Lad Bible who bring you Minutes With. If you've ever watched an episode, you'll know the type of stories you can expect from us. Gangsters.
The police just come round with guns. No, they're right, now we're f***.
Hackers.
We hacked the Prime Minister of Tunisia.
Spies.
The whole of the area where we were was infested with Stasi vehicles.
And people who've been through unique experiences.
You know, one thing you should know about espionage, as well as bomb making, the first mistake is your last mistake.
In this new series, we get stuck into a more in-depth conversation with some extraordinary people who've led extraordinary lives.
I don't mind talking about it because I'm not ashamed. And I didn't realise that anyone would find out or know, or anyone would judge me for it.
I'm Ben Powell-Jones, and in this episode, we sit down with Jenny Radcliffe. Jenny is a professional con artist. She's a burglar for hire, breaking into homes and businesses to put security measures to the test.
When we go to security and say, okay, so this is what we did, he put his head in his hands and just was saying to his colleague, that's £2 million.
But it's not usually jamming windows open and jumping over laser beams like in the movies. Jenny's work is mostly social engineering or human hacking. She sees how she can manipulate people to gain access to places she shouldn't be.
He goes out and very quickly, whilst he was out the room, searched all his jacket pockets, found his phone. We knew his PIN because we'd looked over his shoulder, got everything we needed. And we left by the other door down the stairs. So by the time he got back with the decaf and the biscuits, we were gone and he's hacked.
We hear about the biggest jobs of Jenny's 30-year career, the mistakes we all make when it comes to security, and the mistake Jenny made that nearly cost her life.
I might get away with this, but if I don't, they're going to shoot me.
So they had guns?
They were in and out. And then I heard lots of metallic clicking and things that was the guns.
This is Jenny's story.
Jenny, we've obviously met you before. But for anyone who didn't see the video we did with you previously, do you mind giving me a brief introduction to who you are and what you're famous for?
Sure. So my name is Jenny Radcliffe and I'm known online as the People Hacker. And I'm a social engineer. So that is a no-tech hacker who infiltrates businesses and companies and organisations, mostly using psychology. And I'm kind of famous for two things. It's the psychology of scams and cons and also physical infiltration. So that's when a client hires me to test their security, gates, alarms, but also whether people will let me in or whether there's any gaps operationally.
Great. Very concise explanation. You've obviously done that before.
Yes, I have to explain it a lot because people's image of a hacker is usually a man in a black hoodie over a keyboard, kind of hacking something from, you know, a distance, very technical. What people don't realise is the hackers come in different flavours. So, and the human kind.
Sure. So people hacker, I mean, it's a really cool title. As you've just said there, the traditional image of hackers is people on a keyboard,
yeah,
doing it remotely from the distance. A people hacker, a person hacker, it's somebody who goes into a location and tries to gain access or remove something or basically do something that would be illegal. But the difference is that that company has actively contracted you to do it. Is that correct?
That's right. So I'm a security consultant, right? So, you know, what social engineering is about is exploiting the things that make us human, our mistakes, our emotions, the psychology of all of that. And that's actually behind most of the breaches and security incidents that you'll read about. Even if they're technical in nature, there's still got to be someone who gives the information, who clicks on the link, and all of that's exploitable. For me, my specialism was always just the idea that we could get into somewhere, someone could hire us. Because if we can get in, so can criminals, so can people with malintent. So it's kind of like a fire drill, right? So what we're doing is we're being hired to test what could be done, the art of the possible, if someone wanted to get into that building without authorization.
It's a really interesting concept because I guess as technology advances and gets more and more infallible, it seems like the weakest link in the chain of security could end up being humans, right?
True. And the weakest link is a term that's used a lot in security. But I don't like that, right?
Okay.
Because that's what criminals want us to think. They want us to think that we're helpless against this. But actually, that's not true. You know, people are informed we'll stop a lot of these things happening. But the truth is technology does a lot of heavy lifting, keeps a lot of attacks out. But there's that small percentage that doesn't rely on tech. So it's the phone call that resonates with someone for a particular reason. Or it's someone who just has a good story that resonates with a receptionist or with a security guard. And if you don't look very dangerous, which I don't, sometimes that can be a weak link, but we're not the weakest link.
Okay.
Because then we're giving in, you see, and I don't want to do that.
Okay. We're going to get into your career and all the sort of amazing stories that you've got. But let's go back right to the beginning. You know, how do you become a people hacker? Because obviously, before I met you previously, it wasn't something I'd really heard about. It's not a common thing. It's not a particularly common job. And I think when you started, it was very uncommon. So how do you start in something like that?
There's not really a career path for it. I started out just because when I was a kid, basically, my parents wanted me to hang out with my family. It was a rough area. They wanted me to sort of learn some, to be a bit streetwise, you know. I'd followed someone into a building and that type of thing. And I learned just skills, just infiltration skills. We were getting into empty buildings in Liverpool.
So this is just bored kids playing around, trying to figure out how to go into a...
Yeah, we call it urban exploration these days. But yeah, and you know, I give talks about this all over the world, and there's always someone, usually very respectable in the audience, who goes, oh, we did that too. You know, there was an empty house in our block. There was an empty building in the neighbourhood. The difference was, is that I turned it into a career because after a while, we stopped just going for empty buildings and said, well, let's see if we could, you know, can we spend the night in a museum, right? And then there's a movie about it. But, you know, can we get into we got into a funeral parlour as well because we thought we wanted to do that. Turns out you don't actually want to see a dead body as a teenager.
Oh, God.
But we thought that we did. And so it was kind of just an organic thing. We just did it. And then in the end, I ended up sort of being hired to do it as well.
So let's talk about that transition, because I think, you know, I remember growing up in sort of the northeast in a rural area.
Yeah.
And we do the same thing, like old community centres, you'd try and break in or, you know, without causing too much damage. But that's where most people leave it.
Yes.
And then they go and get a job in the shops or whatever.
Mm.
How did you transition that into something people were paying you to do?
So I was working with some friends from the neighbourhood and some of my family, some cousins. And as we got older, the cousins started to work as security in some of the pubs and clubs in Liverpool. And the only people who had any money at the time were the soccer players, the football players. Mm. Before too long, one of the football players, who shall remain nameless, basically said, can you check my house? You know, if you can get into anywhere, can you get into my house? I've bought all this security and I'm worried that, you know, it's not that secure. Can you try and do it? Sort of more as a bet you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the boys and me, we kind of went and we did. And he was impressed and sort of gave us a tip. It wasn't really a formal arrangement. But word got out that we could do that. We said, you know, you need to reinforce this window. You need to get a better alarm. You know, you need to stop your cleaner letting Jenny in just because she smiles and says, I smiled, I think that one. And I don't even remember that first one all that clearly. But, you know, it was things like I'd say, I'm come to measure for new curtains. Mm. Can you let me in? And, you know, smile sweetly and in a go. And gradually, the sort of word got out. We did more than one. Then we did another one. Started charging them, saying, well, you know, you need to pay us properly. But they have businesses in the city centre. So it was like, well, there's the offices. And it kind of just went from there. We sort of, it was never really a particularly planned route into the business. And so before too long, I'd done a lot of buildings in Liverpool. We got into a few offices. And then I got a call. And it was from a guy who ended up being a client, still is a client for many years. And he asked me to do a job in some council offices in Liverpool. And I said, oh, that's fine. I'll just ring the boys and see if they're available. And he said to me, but do you really need the boys for this one? And as soon as he said it, I kind of thought, well, no. So I told them anyway, but I did that one on my own. And then after that, it kind of sporadically, I used to get these jobs all the time having a normal career.
Right. Oh, okay. So at that point in time, what was your other job then?
So I actually worked for some Fortune 500 companies doing just a normal standard job, but my side hustle, I suppose we call it a side hustle. And the thing that always made me excited and the thing I really loved was doing these security jobs on the side. And particularly when that job started to send me abroad. So they started to send me to places to do negotiations, contract negotiations. And whilst I was away, I'd get jobs coming in.
While you're abroad?
From the client, yeah. So I'd do, you know, for example, we went all over Asia. I'd be doing negotiations in Asia during the day, but then I get a call to say, you know, before you go home, or, you know, will you look at this site? We've got another job. And so, I'd be making more money doing the security side than my regular job, but having to keep it very quiet because obviously I wasn't allowed to do another job, number one. And number two, at the time, you just couldn't say, oh, I'm a burglar for hire. And you can hire me sure. to test your security. And it's legit, but it just wasn't spoken about.
Was there even a term for it at that point? You
know, no.
How did you refer to yourself when you, like, when
just,
you talk?
It was just like breaking and entering, but it was, you know, at the client's request,
yeah.
you know, it like, of course, when we were kids, it wasn't. But as soon as it kind of got more legitimate and I got bigger jobs, that was somebody asking me, can you look into this? Can you get into this factory? Can you get into this office? And we talk about breaking and entering, but it's actually, I learned very quickly, it's much easier to talk your way in. Mm-hmm. Or to sneak in than to force your way in.
Well, let's go back to that. What was the first job you had after the football players where it was actually a business, you know, where you were like, oh, okay, this is... I think you mentioned the one where you sort of abandoned the cousins and went at it at your own.
Yeah, they didn't care. I mean, they were yeah. like, yeah, because for them, once it became more than just, you know, a caper, just like a laugh, they didn't want to write reports and do
okay,
all of
right.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I was like the one that was writing the reports and kind of presenting it to the client in a very non-threatening way.
Yeah,
whereas the boys look like big big security guards, you know.
And was that the first one that you mentioned, the council, was it a council block? Was that what you said?
Government building.
The government building.
Yeah.
Let's go. Can we go through that, your first
sure.
one?
Sure. Yeah. I got a call saying, can you do this job? And as I say, I ended up doing it on my own. And what they wanted me to do was they gave me the name of a politician, a local councillor, who was known at the time. And they said, his offices are there, he's on this floor of this building, famous building in Liverpool. And can you go in and steal his diary? We're testing the security. It's probably in his desk and his office is on this floor. It's a public building, so people are going in and out, I presume, for things like marriage licenses and stuff like that. But it was a public building at the time. There was lots of people gathered outside the entrances and the exits, smoking and meeting people. And so I was able to go in and get into the lift and get to that floor. And I could see a very busy open plan office, lots of phones and things ringing. There was people smoking at the time in an office. I just remember that. It was like, that's how long ago it was. And I could see direct line. I could see the guy in his office. So I knew where his office was. I came out that time. Someone came out and said, "What, you know, can I help you? What are you doing here?" And I said, oh, I just wanted to see him, but I can see he's busy. He said his name. And he said, oh, well, he's busy because there's the conference, isn't there? You know, like tomorrow. It's like, oh, okay. I said, I'll come back. And I did go back that night. Absolutely not stop getting in.
Night as in still open?
That evening.
Night, as in while the building's closed, or is it still open to the public at this point?
So, I suppose technically there were still people around, but I went later, managed to get in, and I didn't use the lift because there's usually cameras in the lift, but it wasn't really that. I just wanted to be like quieter. So I snuck up through the stairs, and it was by that time, the offices are completely empty. So there's no security guards. No one stopped me. This is a breeze. I'm going to be paid a ton of money. Perfect. I'm at uni at the time. That's perfect. Substitute my grant. This is great. Not a problem. Without really ever sort of saying to the client, we're sure that everybody's across this. Like
yeah,
everybody
right.
wants
yeah.
this. You know, it's I just didn't even for a minute think that this might be something. There might be something I should really ask more questions about. And, you know, went to the door. Door was easy enough to open. Most doors, even now, if they don't fit properly, and so you can like swipe the latch. I'm not going into details of how, but you can. And she went in and there's the desk, rooted around. There's like a file of fax type thing. And I picked it up and that was fine.
Were you nervous at this point?
Well, no, because one, I've been asked to do it.
Yes.
Two, there's no sign of any security guards.
Right.
And I was kind of, I suppose, not nervous. I was kind of excited by it, but I just thought it's over with. It's easy. And I picked it up, looked up, and there's the security guards coming at the other end of this office. I don't know what had triggered them or whether they'd see me go in and I'd missed it, whatever it was. But I knew at that moment I had to run, which kind of indicates that this isn't that legitimate, right? So in my heart, I knew. So I run out, and I've got the book, and I run to the stairwell. So there were two. There was the one I came in and there's one at the other end of the office. And what I decided to do was I thought, they're going to think I'm running out.
Mm.
And it became a sort of a signature move because I thought, if they think I'm going to run down, I'll run up.
Right.
And I'll hide instead. And like at the time, obviously I was quite young, quite fit. These security guards, they were lovely, but they were quite unfit.
Mm.
So I had a good minute or so before they were on the stairwell and I ran upwards. I could tell that they sort of got onto me because they see me running and they followed me. And so I only had one shot to do something. And at the top of the top flight of stairs, there was a door to the roof.
Mm.
And like, this is at night. It's kind of autumn, late autumn. It's raining, it's cold. And it was a fire door with a slam bar. So I just banged the bar and I threw the book up onto the roof and then just let them catch me.
Right.
It's like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And they're like, what are you doing here? And they took me and they sat me in a room a few flights down. Why are you here? What are you doing? And I just played it dumb. You know, I just said, well, you know, I wanted to see him. He's a politician, isn't he? You know, please, you know, let me go. My dad will kill me type of thing.
And you didn't at that point want to say, oh, no, I've been paid to do it.
No. And I just, because like, it was always, the idea was always like, for as long as you can do it, you've got to maintain that.
Right. Because I guess if you say that, you've lost, haven't you? Because then you
kind of, it was like psychological, like, well, you know, and I just felt like it's sort of like somewhere at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, this isn't quite legitimate. Like,
right.
Maybe this isn't right. But for whatever reason, I just didn't say, well, someone's asked me to steal this diary. So I was just like, oh, I just wanted to see him. Sorry, I know I shouldn't be there. And started to cry and everything. And they were lovely, right? Like, well, you shouldn't be letting the side down. You know, you don't do that, do you? Mm. And I'm like, oh, I know. But he's in the papers and everything. I just wanted to talk and wanted to ask him something. And in the end, what could they do?
Mm.
You know, were they going to call the police? Were the police going to come? Like, what are they going to say? I look like what I was, which was a student. So they really, I sort of thought, and I kind of knew, I think they're not going to call the police. What are they going to do?
Yeah, because in their head, they don't know you've stolen the diary, right?
So no, because it's on the roof, right? Getting wet in the rain.
Yeah, right.
And so in the end, they just thought, oh, just don't be silly in future. Just go. Yeah. And they let me go. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Right, really. And I feel so bad. I felt bad, you know, at the time. I thought, these are so sweet. And they let me go. And they let me go. And I went home. But what was on my mind was I failed this task, this first ever task that I've ever done on my own. You know, I failed it. I'm going to go back and get it. So I sort of, that's something to eat. And then I said to my dad, look, I'm going to go and stay at my mates. I'm going to stay in Diggs. I'll see you tomorrow. And I went back.
The same night?
Same night.
Oh, God.
Really late by now. And I stood outside the building. It was pouring with rain. And I'm thinking, that diary's going to be soaked. And I just watched and there was just nothing going on. Desk not manned. And I'm thinking the doors will be locked this time of night. But there was no one there. So I walked up and just kind of stood by the doors. And just one of the doors was just like slightly open. They'd not locked it. I think about it now and I think, oh, I shouldn't have done it. But anyway, I go in, walk past the reception desk, empty reception desk, go up the stairs, go to the roof and grab the diary and just ran out, you know. And I've done it. I went back to my friend's house at the uni. Put the diary on a radiator overnight to dry it out and put it in a jiffy bag and posted it to the client the next day from the uni post office in the student union, Liverpool University Student Union, and got paid.
And what did they say? Were they impressed?
I think they always expected me to get it.
Right.
You know?
And you didn't, did you explain that it'd been hard or what happened or were you just like, there it is?
No, because what is,
it's pretty cool.
Because he doesn't care about the minutiae of how you do the job.
Mm.
Still doesn't. They just want the job done.
Mm.
Now, years later, you know, I always watch that. I always watch the news for that particular counsellor to see if there was ever any mention of it. And there was never any mention of any of it. But that was really the first time I got paid on my own to do it. Over the years, it kind of ebbed and flowed. So there were times when my legitimate career was very busy and the jobs didn't really come in. And then there were times when it seemed to just be every time I went on a business trip, come up to London or you know, somewhere, I'd get a job. And I ended up doing quite a lot of them and sort of recruiting a few people to work with me on different things. But it was always not the main thing that mm-hmm. I was doing. Mm-hmm. It was always like sort of like this little side, like you say, side hustle, we call it now. Until it wasn't, you know, until I kind of left being paid to do things now, my own consultancy, doing training and negotiation and that type of thing. And eventually started to kind of think, well, I could actually come out of the closet, as it were, and say, this is something I can do, because I could see the internet was coming online. You could start to see that there was people, particularly in the States, that also did similar work.
Oh, interesting.
And so maybe I could announce this at some point and say that I did it. But for years and years, I told practically no one except the people I worked with what I did, because even now when I occasionally meet people who I worked with back then, you know, in the procurement department, they'll say, well, did you, you know, I didn't know you did that. Did you do that? Really? You were doing that when we were in Asia? And you're like, well, yeah, but like, this is why I don't want to tell you, because it sounds extraordinary. It was borderline illegal. You know, at least in my head, I never had contracts or documents.
Right,
or anything
okay.
Originally.
So there wasn't much protection if
now
you did get caught.
Now you get it. Yeah, I mean, now, you know, everything's contracted and, you know, you have a client meeting off-site and you know the client and everything. But back then...
It's a stereotype, obviously, but probably people were thinking, yeah, a big ex-military team, of course they can break in.
Yeah.
But if this one single person can break in, then it shows there's a massive problem with our security.
Yeah, and you know, I'm still hired now, but I still have loads and loads of friends and colleagues who are former military or even current military and clients, you know, military clients. And they hire me for that reason. One, because their go-to is to blow the thing up, right? You know, of course they can get in anyway. They've got weapons and everything else. So there was that. And there was just that idea of it was just a more subtle way of doing it. It was a quieter energy. And I suppose it made it all, it was all the more dangerous that someone could just find a way in through psychology or whatever.
We're just going to take a break for a minute to talk about a sponsor of this episode, and that's NordVPN. Connor, I believe you use NordVPN.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, so... Again, Christmas time coming up. You might be abroad with your kids, with your family, and you want to catch up on the latest TV show that you've been streaming back home. But problem is, you're in the United States, for example, and you can't log on to British Netflix. Well, NordVPN stops that. It allows you to change your location virtually, so you can log on to all the streaming services that you subscribe for in the UK and watch to your heart's content.
Oh, fantastic. And you actively use NordVPN?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm a regular user, again, for that reason. But it's also great, for example, if you're abroad for work, say, and you want to book a hotel for your next trip, but you want local rates as opposed to the rates you're being served from the country you're in. NordVPN, again, lets you do that to make hotel booking easier and cheaper.
Extraordinary Lives listeners can currently get an exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/minutes. You'll get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and an additional 4 months absolutely free. And best bit is it's completely risk-free with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/minutes.
And on that, actually, could you give us a few examples of ways that you did use psychology to gain access to places over your career?
There was a factory that wanted us to get in, but he was... The guy was lovely, but he was fairly sure that we wouldn't be able to do it because they'd spent so much money on the perimeter. So they had a great big fence and they had security guards and everything else. And he said to me, the only way you're going to get in is if someone leaves the door open, sort of like, and that's not going to happen, you know. When we looked at that client, they were very hierarchical. Like people in that particular business, they were rule driven. If you were told to do something by your manager, you did it. And so we just had to get beyond the fence and then find a way to give them a new rule, if you like. We wanted to get beyond the security guards, first of all. We knew that they had a policy where minor auto repairs were fixed on site. It was part of their kind of package for management, I guess. And in the car park, there were lots of parked cars, like pool cars, used by managers and things, I guess, behind the fence. You know, I suppose that was what it was. And we saw one of them. It was quite near the fence. And we, first of all, we'd thrown some rocks at it, pebbles, and nothing has happened. So we got a pellet gun and just kind of shot at the same place on the windscreen. I say, wait, what? This was a colleague of mine. I wasn't shooting the gun. Until we made a crack. And then we hired a little van and put a magnetic sound we got made. Say, and as I said, say it says Jenny's Auto Repair.
Yeah.
And I get in the back and we drove in and said to security, you've got the car. This is the registration. It's got a crack in the windscreen. And security just kind of went, oh, yeah, so you're here to repair it. It wasn't that they said, let's see credentials or anything. Because there I am with the van.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I wasn't in the front, but there's the van and there's the boys and everyone looks very official and there's clipboards and high-vis vests. And those two things are like fatal because it's an authority ploy. You look the part, you sound the part. They look vaguely disinterested. So they just don't, people expect criminals to look like criminals, right? They expect hackers to look like hackers. But the truth is it could be anyone and they weren't doing the checks. So once we were in, I sneak out and hid. The boys went and just looked at the car and pretended that, you know, they just kind of looked at it and came back and said to security, this is, we can't manage this today. You know, someone will have to come out.
Oh, so they actually left you in,
they
left you in there. Yeah. Right, okay.
They left. And I hid behind a big garbage, like great big industrial bins, and just put a sign on the door saying, please do not close this door. And we got a little logo off the internet and put it on the top of the paper and signed it like HR and some signature and just waited for someone to come and see the sign and go, oh, that's a rule. And that, so as soon as the guy comes out, there was a few people walked past it, but the guy came out, saw the sign and wedged the door open and then I could get in. When we go to security and say, okay, so this is what we did. And the guy said, oh God. And he said, you know, and I says, and then we put the sign on the door, please do not shut this door. Thank you. And I got in. And he put his head in his hands and just was saying to his colleague, that's 2 million quid. But the psychology of it is, it's in a way, it's a bit, it's by deception. That sign is a lie, right? And people just see it and obey the sign. But it's same as true as if they say this door is alarmed. Now, we look at it sometimes and go, well, is it? Or is that just a sign? Or keep out.
Mm.
We see it more as a suggestion. Than a rule. Okay. When we're on task.
Right.
Not that I'm recommending anyone else, but, you know.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because like you said, they'd spent all the money on the fence, which didn't work because you got through that. Mm-hmm. And then you used a single printed out piece of paper to gain access to the building.
Yeah, oh, no, I drew it. I didn't even print it. I wrote it.
Oh, right. Okay, fine.
It was
Sharpie. But yeah. You know, what would they then go back and do? How would they, like, improve that security?
So the whole point of all of these things is awareness, right? So what we're trying to do is say, look, you've got to train people to question more and to check credentials more and to not rely on the fact that you've got security in place. You know, we see it often in security, we say hard shell, soft centre, big fence. Therefore, if someone's inside the site, it must be okay because we've got that great big fence. It's sort of an illusion. So a lot of it's kind of deception-based. This is the illusion of security. So the idea would be is to train those people to be more questioning of people on site, to check those credentials, to not just blindly obey something. And I mean, that's a, you know, that was a bit of an exception. But mostly what the job is about is talking to people about how to recognise a threat, to follow operational procedure, and just be aware of what an attack might look like, what a con artist looks like, really. And most cons, in fact, almost all of them, and that's whether it's a social media approach, like in romance scams, for example, or whether it's even in person, there are basically four red flags. What the first one is, there'll be an emotional element. So in the case of romance scams, it'll be, you know, there's this person that the person believes and hopes is a new romantic partner and a friend. And suddenly there'll be a crisis, you know, they've been in an accident or they need to catch a flight and then they'll ask for money and it'll be quick. Because what they don't want, and I say we, because we simulate this for clients, but you want someone emotionally, you want someone's emotion to be high, because when your emotion's high, your logic is low. Your decision-making capacity diminishes when you're worried about something or excited about something, you know, I've won something or, you know, I've got this new romantic partner. In that emotional state, you won't make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there will be an easy way out. Click the link. Pay the invoice, open the attachment, give me the information. Mm. And those are the signs, no matter how you'd approach, that there might be a con in progress, a scam in progress. So you step back from it and just give it some time. And once that emotion comes down, you can say, actually, I've got, you're in with a chance.
Something's
to
off. Yeah. So tell us about a time where you targeted a specific individual rather than a property.
All of this about social media is all very well, but a lot of people who don't use social media get a bit, not smug, because that's wrong, but they think, well, I might be safe because I don't use social media. I don't post pictures of everything or whatever. And we had a client whose security team had asked us to get into this guy's office and his phone, okay? And he was very technically not sort of savvy. He didn't really care about social media, barely used his phone. We had to get to him, but it was like, how do you get to someone if our go-to research is online and he's not really on social media? But we found out where he lived, and that's because he didn't opt out of online address services. And we looked to see which businesses he was a director of, which is public information in the UK, but all over the world, there's equivalent of both of those things. And we found that he was director of a charity along with his wife. So to get to him, needed to play in a couple of things. And psychologically, it's like, what are the triggers we've all got? This guy, I figured, would probably be ego. Okay, we're going to flatter him, right? So fear, flattery, greed are the three main go-tos. So let's flatter him. So we buy some tickets for an event that the charity was holding, and we rocked up to the hotel where there was this big sort of awards night and dinner and an auction, and pretended to be reporters for an online magazine, and went up to the wife actually and said, can we interview just a few words about the charity and everything? And whilst I'm interviewing her, I've got my associate looking over his shoulder for if he goes for his phone and puts his PIN in. So again, not a technical hack, but I can still find out what his PIN is, which was his, just to say, which was his birth date. Right? So it was kind of, don't use that as a PIN. And so we got that. And I said, we interviewed you. And I said, that's great. I said, can I just contact you and give you the link when we publish this? And, you know. And she said, yes. And I rang her back the next day. And remember, so what I'm doing is I'm getting to him through her.
Yeah.
And I said, it was a brilliant interview, but the sound equipment, our sound guy's not happy because it was too noisy and the recording doesn't really work. But anyway, we prefer to do a much bigger piece, put you on the cover and everything. The problem is, and this is an urgency, the problem is I've got a horrible deadline and it needs to be this week. Mm. Is there any chance you'll let us take some shots in like a corporate setting at all? I mean, and she went, of course there is. He'll meet you in the office on Thursday at like 9:30. And of course, I got past everything. There's nothing now. Is the only thing was he had this secretary who was pretty ferocious that we never thought we could get past. And we just searched her and she was just ferocious, rock solid. But other than that, there was no real barrier at that point. And so we get to his office and we set up like a mic and a couple of little, you know, little ring lights and said, okay, we'll do an interview. And he said, fine. He said, would you like a coffee or anything first? And I said, oh, I'd love a decaf. Now, I would never do that, right? Death before decaf. But it was because I knew he probably would have to go and make a decaf, sure. Whereas he had a coffee pot outside. And off he goes and leaves us to set up all our equipment. He goes out and very quickly, whilst he was out the room, searched all his jacket pockets, found his phone. We knew his PIN because we'd looked over his shoulder. His computer was open, got into his computer, got everything we needed, and we left by the other door down the stairs. So by the time he got back with the, you know, the decaf and the biscuits, we were gone and he's hacked. But we did it through researching him particularly and not the company or the building.
So would he have been annoyed about that?
He wasn't, you know, he was great. He was really, really great about it. I think sometimes... So most people aren't annoyed because they can see that we're doing this to protect them.
Right.
And we're showing them, you know, a gap in their personal / organisational security. But he was very interested to know how we did it.
Right.
Psychologically speaking and the research and how they could close down some of those little routes to find him. And then he asked me to go for dinner with him and explain a bit more in London. And, I didn't know if he was going to be angry or whatever. But he wasn't. He asked me lots of questions, you know, how did I get started and how specifically did I get to him and could anyone do it? And we were in, he took me to a nice restaurant and he said, what do you want? You know, what do you want? And I was a vegetarian at the time, had been for a decade. And he said, Jenny, you know, you're in one of the best restaurants in London and someone else is paying. You should eat the Wagyu beef. And I'd never had Wagyu beef. So sort of I felt like bad and that like I owed him, you know, whatever. So I got it. And of course it was fabulous. And then, and he laughed. He said, I got you back. RIP vegetarianism. But he then gave his security team a lot of money to improve security. Mm. He made sure that all his staff, and he had lots of businesses globally, got awareness training about oversharing on social media, about checking people's credentials and things like that. And so that they were a lot more secure. And, you know, and sometimes you can see why someone gets to be a leader, you know, because if you took offence and being defensive about it, they probably wouldn't have fixed the problems that they had.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I remember actually after we'd met you last time, I was talking to one of my bosses, who's one of the founders, and sort of said, oh, you know, I was thinking we should have got her to come in and hack you and see what your security is like. And he was like, no, I would have fired you if you'd done that.
Yeah, because I'm asked to do it a lot, right? So a lot of the time I speak at lots and lots of conferences and big, you know, corporate events. And a lot of the time they'll say, can you do a talk? But before you do the talk, can you hack the directors, right? Which is like, it's so common. I think everyone wants their boss to kind of sort of see what I'm saying. If you don't have permission for that, it's hard to really appreciate just how invasive that can be for someone.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing to remember is that everyone's got skeletons in the closet. Like if you dig hard enough, there's something that someone wants to keep private, secret. And so we tend to say no, even with permission. If I was to do that publicly, you don't know what that person needs to keep secret, you know. So we tend to say no, but the idea of it to people is, you know, it's so exciting and dramatic. But really, this is not a... It's not a joke and it's not entertainment.
Yeah, sure.
We're doing it to keep people safe.
It makes sense.
We tend not to do it.
Obviously, not asking you personally, but like as a kind of broad brushstrokes, what could someone expect to be paid for, say, a big job like the one you've just discussed, the breaking into the director?
Well, it's well paid.
It's well paid.
So you'd be looking at, you know, what a top end consultant would earn per day.
Good answer.
For example, for one of the big four consultancy companies.
So it's well paid. But when you're telling me this story, what's going through my head is, have you ever been tempted to use your powers for evil? Because it feels like you could probably make a lot of money, or someone could, if they didn't have your morals.
So obviously you get lots of strange requests in this job. And especially if you do an interview with something like Lab Bible, where nearly a million people watch it, whatever. But no, I'm not tempted. And I think I'm more tempted by little things on the job than the big things. I'm never tempted for the big things because I've seen the harm it can do.
Sure.
I've seen not just the big companies that have been scammed and conned and hacked and the way that that affects, you know, all their employees and their reputation, but it's also that the thousands of tiny little miseries that causes. Mm. So for example, I had a client who was hacked on Instagram, ended up giving away some account details, got locked out of her account, and then this hacker took over her account. Mm. Now she'd run a little bakery, right? 5 years. And every single day she took a photograph of the cake of the day. Mm. So she's got 5 years of all these cakes that she's built, and that's gone. And that's really miserable. It's not the worst thing that happens, but it's miserable, right? All that work gone. So I'm never tempted to go over to the dark side. We've got to use the powers for good. You've got to use those methods to try and make people more secure. So I'm never tempted that way. But I have to have big rules for a physical infiltration. And my crew and people who work with me have to obey those rules. Mm. And so, for example, one of them is you never eat anything on a job.
Okay.
Right? And the reason for this is, first of all, you get quite hungry sometimes, all right? Because you're hiding sometimes in cupboards and, you know, toilets and things for hours and you don't get to eat. And you think, oh, I just need something. So we take maybe a cereal bar on a job. But every single time I've eaten something, something's gone wrong.
Right.
Now, what you need to understand is that burglars are, and I say burglar, I'm a security consultant, just say it again. But anyone who does this type of work, you get rituals and you get superstitious. And I was doing this job in this office, done it many times. And the various things happened, but just on this topic, there was a celebration cake, like an anniversary birthday cake for the company that had clearly just been cut and they'd all gone for a drink. And there it is on the table and it looks so nice. And I was so hungry. And I eat a bit of the cake. And the next thing you know, everything goes wrong, right? The window smashes. There was a cat in the office. There's just a million things. So, you know, I'm tempted by things like that. And so we have rules in place. You don't drink too much. So you hydrate. If you're going to do the job in the evening, you hydrate in the morning. You don't want to be thirsty, right? But you don't want to need the bathroom. Mm. So there's lots of like little rules and temptations and superstitions. I leave little tokens at every job I do. And
do you?
Little silver octopuses for no real reason.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Well, just as a calling card.
I think it helps sometimes when I present the findings to the client. It's a calling card. Mm. And sometimes I have to go back a couple of years later and I want to see if it's still there.
Oh, right.
But it's always got me into trouble a few times because there's been times when I clearly should have left and I've hesitated because I haven't planted the octopus. You know, but, you know, so no, I'm not tempted to go to the dark side of it at all.
Just
we
the
are
odd slice 100%,
of cake. We're 100% trying to stop people with malintent, but we're tempted sometimes to do silly things.
Fair enough. Have you ever come across a job or, you know, a security system that you couldn't infiltrate?
Biotechnology is very good, right? Access, fingerprint access. The story I always tell about this one is, what doesn't bother me is how good the tech is. I have a saying, which is, I don't need to work on the lock. I need to work on the human. Mm. Because if there's a human being that can bypass that lock, then I can get past that lock because I just need the human to bypass it for me. And so I got asked to do a bank infiltration in Germany and there was a bio lock and you can't get, I mean, it's going to say no. My fingerprints are not on the system. So I bandaged up my arm. My hand really tightly, so my fingers are going a bit blue with the bandage, and I carried it quite awkwardly, and I had all these folders in my other arm, and I get into the bank, and it wasn't a bank like a, you know, like a bank that a normal person goes into, like I would go into. It was a very expensive sort of financial powerhouse thing that rich people use, essentially. Very quiet atmosphere, plush carpets, and smell great, and big floral displays, and a security guard. And I go up, I just walk straight to this bio lock, which our reconnaissance had shown where it was. Put the finger on. Computer says now, beep. And I swore, like, really loudly. If you can imagine these gorgeous places full of, like, very expensive furniture and everything, that's terrible. Like, the last thing they want is someone going and creating a fuss. Mm. So the security guard comes over, madam, can I help you? And I'm like, this isn't working. And he's like, oh God, you know, shh. Like I said, and it didn't work yesterday, beep. And I swore again. And he says, I think it's just because you're bandaging everything. You just need to really push. And he goes like this and pushes it down. I went, ow, watch it, mate, God. You know, ow. And so he goes, okay, try the other hand. I said, they didn't try the other hand, put the other hand on. And dropped all the files. And you know when you drop a file and all the paper just goes like in a big like pool. And he's like, oh God. And he goes, look, just helps me pick up. He goes, just go in. And I was just like, thank you. Finally, go through the door and then just took off the bandage in the bin, files in the bin, and did what I normally do inside that bank.
Amazing.
So the biolock is in and of itself brilliant. Not infallible, nothing is, but very good. Mm. the guy can let me in. Mm. So I'm going to work on him, work on the, I don't need to work on the lock. I'm going to work on the human.
We're just going to take a break from the show for a minute to talk about one of the sponsors of this episode, which is Manscaped. It's that time of year again where everyone is wondering what to get for the men in their life, and the guys at Manscaped have a load of great products to check out. One of the producers of the show, Connor, was already a user and fan of the brand, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about it.
Yeah, well, Ben, like you say, it's that time of year where people start asking me what I want for Christmas. I'm notoriously hard to buy for, as mm-hmm. a lot of men are. But what I would say is Manscaped offer a range of products that make great gifts. I'm a big fan of the Lawnmower 4.0 electric trimmer. And actually, if you purchase the performance package, you get the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, as well as a load of other goodies, including grooming and anti-chafe boxer shorts as well, which I can vouch for.
Well, the performance package is just one of many great things you can buy for somebody this Christmas at Manscaped. They also have the hygiene bundle, and listeners of this show will get 20% off as well as free shipping. All you need to do is head over to manscaped.com and enter the promotional code MINUTES. That's manscaped.com and MINUTES, MINUTES.
You know, we meet a lot of types of people like spies, and you ask them about, you know, the films and stuff, and they're like, oh, it's nothing like that, it's actually really boring. And then you sort of meet someone like you, and you go, oh yeah, it's exactly like the films, it sounds just as exciting and interesting.
But when is
you
do it these... though, because we're not really blowing anything up. I mean people,
no, but those heist movie things, you know, where people like hide things in coffee cups or put signs on doors and break through, it's like, it's the way you describe it.
Do you know, that makes me laugh, because I was doing an interview and they would ask me about kit, and I said, we hide things in all sorts, because obviously anything you take as kit, you've got to ask a couple of things. Does this support the persona that I've got? We call it a pretext. Is it something that I can use to, you know, to protect me? Like, spend a lot of time in sort of cupboards and things. So do we need like a mask, a HEPA mask, so that we're not breathing in dust, and a shower cap so you don't get stuff on your head if you're crawling through tunnels and things? But the other thing is, can I explain this prop to a security guard? If the security guards catches me. So one of the things that I'm asked about is lockpicking. If you're caught with lockpicks, you can't explain that away.
Yeah.
You know? So generally not. But there are some things I like to take. Smoke bombs is one thing. So you know little smoke pellets that you use to send up a chimney?
Okay.
So like we've took those on jobs. I don't know whether we should say this because I don't want to give it away. But anyway... If you need a security guard to run in a certain direction, a very good way of doing it is to put a smoke pellet in a bin.
Right, okay.
Right? Yeah, because sense. Then it's like, it's a fire. Mm. Everyone's going to run and check that out. But they, again, you can't explain a little smoke pellet away. So you have to hide them. So we hide them in various things. We can hide them in a water bottle, an opaque water bottle. We'll put things in there. But we'll also put them, I don't want to say this now.
Come on.
But you can hide them in a tampon.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry to say, but like, who's going to check that? Yes. So, you know, you've got like a plastic, so we put things in there as well.
It's clever.
So, you know.
But you're right. It's the last thing people would sort of disassemble.
Because you're playing on embarrassment. Yeah. See, who's going to do that? Who's going to check that? It's one thing to check someone's bag. It's another thing to actually take those apart, and that will never happen. I don't know whether we should use that.
Fascinating. No, definitely. Oh, it's definitely going in.
Imagine the comments. Never
mind. You had moved into quite a successful career in doing this. Mm-hmm. And then there was one job that we talked about last time that made you take quite an extended break.
Yes.
Do you mind if we go through that again?
Yeah, I mean, I was away on business in Asia with my sort of, if you like, legitimate career. Me and a colleague had done all our kind of negotiating everything all around Asia. And we were on our last night in Hong Kong. And I got a call from a client that often does call me and asked me if I want, he basically said, are you traveling home business class? I said, no. He said, do you want to travel home business class and make some money? So I said, oh yeah. And he said, I need you to go to a city. It wasn't Hong Kong. Go to a nearby city. And all I need you to do is get into a house and leave a message for the client. Quite a straightforward job. It should have been a very straightforward job. So basically, I said yes, dumped the colleague and ended up in this different Asian city. And what I had to do was I had to go to, it was a private residence, and get into the office of the guy. and see, again, another address book. Look and see if a name, there was a name in this address book. And if it was there, I had a post-it note with a message to leave on the desk. The thing about this is it was set for a Saturday night. Mm. But I got into the city on a Friday night and went and did reconnaissance on my own on the Friday night. And when I got there, it was just a complete, it was a very affluent neighbourhood, but it was very quiet. There was nothing going on. There wasn't so much as it was by a big lake and a sort of a golf club and stuff. And there wasn't even like a duck on the lake making a noise or a dog barking or anything. And I got to the house and looked at it and it's empty. There's no one there at all, right? So, okay, this is not so bad. And I could see steps leading up to like bay doors, is it? I never knew what you call, they're sort of window door, bay doors.
I think that's
with
right.
Glass. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's how I'll get in, I'll be fine. Go back to the hotel and I run myself this bath, nice hot bath. I'm going to have a little relax. And then I just thought, why wait? Now, the problem with this is that there are rules for these things. Mm. And if I'm supposed to go in on a Saturday night, that's when everyone knows that there's a potential infiltration, right? So it means that if anything goes wrong and someone catches me, then, it's fine. It's okay. It's planned. It's a security job. It's fine. If I go in the night before, nobody knows that I'm there, right? And for all intents and purposes, I am a burglar. So on a whim, on the hot bath, on a whim, get dressed for the job. And I don't really have any kit with me because it was a last minute thing. So I grab a beer, a bottle opener from the mini bar. And I grabbed a little sort of torch from the hotel gift shop, which is on a key ring. And I went back and I go up the and no one's still in. And it's still dead quiet. And I can hear phones ringing inside. No one's answering them, whatever. And I go up the steps at the side of the building, get to these bay doors. And I was going to jimmy them with the bottle opener. But they were open.
Right.
I opened them. So I thought, oh, I don't need to carry it. So I put it at the bottom of the stairs, whatever, and go in. And I get into the office, and it's a great big office. Obviously, the house is kind of not lived in as a home, but used as a base for something. I find the name, so that's good. Put the post-it note on the desk and I'm ready to leave. And then I just heard cars pulling up to the front door. The lights kind of came through. So the office was near the front door. The lights come through and I can tell there's two vehicles outside. And in that minute, I knew I'd made a really big mistake because first of all, I didn't really question too much about who the client, the target was because I knew the client, you see. But obviously, this is some sort of businessman who doesn't even really lock the house, which is kind of a bit of a worry because it's either that he's careless, which could be the case, or that he doesn't care about locking the house because nobody's going to break in. And so I must have triggered some sort of internal alarm, right? It didn't look like there was anything. And I'm going back a few years, so it's not as if, now, you know, there's CCTV everywhere. People have, smart doorbells, for God's sake, but not then. So I run up the stairs, I run back out and I've got to hide from them because I can see that they're really a very serious security team that didn't look to me as if I could smile or talk or laugh my way out of it, right? There are certain times when you just look at people and you go, there's no explaining this. They're going to do their job and their job is to, enforce security. I come back down the stairs and I hid. And they're kind of at the front door and I hid at the side and moved around. And I'm pressing myself into the sort of the wall. There's a sort of a side garden. So if you imagine, there's the building, there's the stairs, there's gardens all around and a wall. And I was kind of behind all foliage and stuff. I'm pressing myself into this wall and I'm in black. So I'm trying to hide my face because I'm thinking it's dark by now and more or less, and they're going to see my face. It's big and they're preoccupied. I might get away with this. But if I don't, they're going to shoot me. They're going to get me. I can't explain it.
So at this point, so they had guns?
Well, I didn't know that then, but they were in and out. And then I heard lots of metallic clicking and things that was the guns while I was lying there. And remember, I'm lying there, I didn't quite see everything. So everything's kind of on, sort of on what I can hear. The cars are right by me as well. They're talking, the radios are going, they're in and out. And honestly, the fear level of something like that was so high because I just knew this was not legitimate at this point. That tomorrow night, I might have some backup, although I wasn't sure, you know. But I'd had so many jobs from that client that I kind of assumed, I didn't ask too many questions, I sort of assumed that it was okay. But the more I thought about it, the dodgier it seemed. And I kind of felt like I was going to laugh. And it's so strange because I was either going to throw up or laugh, really. Partly because I'm kind of pressed against the wall and the fear and the adrenaline. But partly it was just so ridiculous. And I've spoken to people since and they say, well, that seems, you know, a weird reaction. It was a weird reaction, but it was just so, I just thought, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then as quickly as they turned up, I just heard the radio say something else in like, you know, a different language. And then they jumped in the car and they drove away. You know, so someone had called them off or something had happened. They'd gone in the house, they'd found whatever they found or not found. Anyway, they left and they didn't see me. So now I've got to get back to my hotel. I sort of got to my feet. I was a bit wobbly or whatever. And I walked away and eventually kind of ran and got a cab. At that point, you know, sort of all like I'm crying and everything. And I just thought, this is a stupid thing. I might not see my family ever again. And because I was impatient. But also, thanks a lot for not saying to me, by the way, stick exactly to what we've agreed. It kind of goes without saying, but at some jobs, it's like you will say there's dogs or there's an armed response or there's a police response. You know, you kind of emphasize this one might be dangerous. It was obvious, so it's my blunder. But it could have done with being said as well. So, you know, get to the hotel. It was late then. It was like early hours of the morning. And I just thought, I need to drink. And so I go into the bar. And because it was a very expensive hotel that the client had put me in, they don't question. They know I'm a resident. They didn't question the fact that I was covered in mud. My hair was all out. I had blood on my face, muck and cuts. And obviously was been crying and, you know. And I just said, I need a drink. But I want something very alcoholic that a kid could drink. Because you just want the sugar as well. And I just didn't want it to be a challenge to drink. And he put it down. I'm looking at myself and there was all mirrors behind the bar. And I just looked like hell. And I downed this drink quite quickly. And it didn't touch the sides. And I look up towards another one and the guy said, do you want a beer to chase that? And as soon as he said it, I thought, oh my God, I've left the beer opener with the hotel name in it and everything. I got it from the bar at the side. So like those heavies now, if they go back, which they, you know, I don't know, they would see that and they'd come straight to the hotel. But I was too tired to do anything. I mean, what could I do at that point? So I had another drink and went to my room. I remember thinking when I left, that bath, I haven't put any cold in the bath. It's probably still going to be warm and I can just jump straight in to that bath when I get in. And I got back and just the bath was cold and I just kind of collapsed and slept for a long time and went straight to the airport when I woke up and stayed at the airport for far longer than I needed to be just because I felt safe and then got home. And when I spoke to the client, you know, he'd obviously spoken to the guy whose house it was. It was obviously some private arrangement with them because he knew that I'd left the bottle open. He said, you know, why did you went in early? And I said, I know. And I said, I was on my own because I was 24 hours early. And he said, yeah. So in other words, there was no getting, if they'd have got me that night, there was no getting out of that. If I'd have waited another 24 hours, it still would have been, don't get me wrong, a terribly bad situation. But he'd have called and said, this is in progress at the allotted time. And it was just impatience. It just looked easy. And this is what I was saying to you earlier. It's why I have all these rules and rituals. The scope of one of those assignments is so important. And I learned the hard way that if you go outside the scope, you can put yourself at unnecessary risk.
Did you ever find out whose house it was?
No comment.
Okay.
but after that, were so familiar with the setup and doing the job that we hadn't covered the basics. Mm. I felt that I needed a break. Mm. And so I stopped for a couple of years. And by the time that 2 years of me just not picking up the phone for security jobs, kind of hanging up my guns and not doing anything, by the time that finished, there was much more sort of cyber security and social media was much more kind of prevalent. And at that point, I started taking jobs again and kind of got back into it. But I needed a couple of years out of the game because I got cocky and I got familiar and it was all too easy. And like that nearly got me hurt or worse.
Jenny, it's the second time we've met you. It's just as interesting as the first. Always love hearing the stories. They're brilliant. And, you know, makes me want to go out and try leaving signs on doors to manipulate people. But I'm not going to do that. I'll leave it to professionals like yourself.
Well, thank you.
What's next for you?
I have my autobiography, which will be called People Hacker and will be out in February 2023 with all of these stories and lots more in it. So that's be out and I'll lots of, hopefully lots of interviews and things that you can catch up with me.
Brilliant. Well, look forward to it. Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you.